The Marquis de Carabas tossed the figurine to Mr. Croup, who caught it eagerly, like an addict catching a plastic baggie filled with white powder of dubious legality. And then, without a backward glance, the Marquis left the cellar. Mr. Croup examined the figurine minutely, turning it over and over in his hands, a Dickensian curator of the Museum of the Damned contemplating a prize exhibit. His tongue flicked out from time to time like a snake's. A perceptible flush appeared on his pallid cheeks. "Oh, fine, fine," he whispered. "Tang Dynasty, indeed. 1,200 years old. The finest pottery figurines ever made on this earth. This was created by Kai Lung, finest of potters. There is not a twin to it in existence. Examine the colour of the glaze, the sense of proportion, the life." He was smiling now, like a baby. The innocent smile looked lost and confused on the shady terrain of Mr. Croup's face. "It adds a little wonder and beauty to the world." And then he grinned, too widely, and lowered his face to the figurine and crushed its head in his teeth, chomping and chewing wildly, swallowing in lumps. His teeth ground the china to a fine powder, which dusted the lower part of his face. He gloried in its destruction, throwing himself into it with the strange madness and uncontrolled bloodlust of a fox in a henhouse. And then, when the statue was nothing but dust, he turned to Mr. Vandemar. He seemed strangely mellow, almost languid. "How long did we say we'd give him?"
"An hour."
And how long has it been?"
6 minutes.
Mr. Croup lowered his head. He ran a finger across his chin, licked the powdered clay from his fingertip.
"You follow him, Mr. Vandemar," said Mr. Croup. "I need a little more time in which to savour the occasion."
Hunter could hear them walking down the steps. She was standing in the shadows, with her arms folded, in the same position she had been when they left her. Richard was humming, loudly. Dor was giggling, helplessly. Then she would stop and tell Richard to be quiet, and then she would start giggling again. They walked past Hunter, without noticing her. She stepped out of the shadows and said, "You have been gone for 8 hours." It was a statement of fact, without reproach or curiosity. Dor blinked at her.
"It didn't seem that long."
Hunter said nothing. Richard grinned blearily at her.
"Don't you want to know what happened? Well, we got ambushed by Mr. Croup and Mr. Vandemar. Unfortunately, we didn't have a bodyguard around. Still, I gave them a good seeing to."
Hunter raised a perfect eyebrow. "I am in awe of your pugilistic talents," she said coolly. Dor giggled.
"He's kidding. Actually, they killed us."
As an expert in the termination of bodily functions, Hunter said, "I must beg to differ. You are neither of you dead. At a guess, you were both very drunk." Dor stuck her tongue out at her bodyguard.
"Nonsense. Touched hardly a drop. That much."
She held out two fingers to show how tiny an amount
"that much"
was.
"Just went to a party," said Richard, "and saw Jessica, and saw a real angel, and got a little black piggy-wiggy, and came back here."
"Just a little drink,"
continued Dor intently. old, old drink. Tiny little drink. Very small. Almost not there. She began to hiccup. Then she giggled again. A hiccup interrupted her, and she sat down suddenly on the platform. I think maybe we are a bit smashed, she said soberly. Then she closed her eyes and began solemnly to snore. The Marquis de Carabas was running through the underways as if all the hounds of hell had his scent and were on his trail. He was splashing through 6 grey inches of the Tyburn. The hangman's river, kept safe in the darkness in a brick sewer beneath Park Lane on its way south to Buckingham Palace. He had been running for 17 minutes. 30 feet below Marble Arch, he paused. The sewer divided into 2 branches. The Marquis de Carabas ran down the left-hand branch. Several minutes later, Mr. Vandemar walked through the sewer. And when he reached the junction, he, too, paused for a few moments, sniffing the air. And then he, too, walked down the left-hand branch. Hunter dropped Richard Mayhew's unconscious body into a pile of straw with a grunt. He rolled in the straw, said something that sounded like,
"Fothril the juggly mobile wug,"
and went back to sleep. She put Dor down in the straw next to him more gently. Then she stood beside Dor, in the dark stables under the ground, on guard still. The Marquis de Carabas was exhausted. He leaned against the tunnel wall and stared at the steps that went up ahead of him. Then he pulled out the golden pocket watch and looked at the time. 35 minutes had passed since he had fled the hospital cellar.
"Is it an hour yet?"
asked Mr. Vandemar. He was sitting on the steps ahead of the Marquis, picking his nails with a knife.
"Not even close," gasped the Marquis.
"Felt like an hour,"
said Mr. Vandemar helpfully. There was a shiver in the world, and Mr. Croup stood behind the Marquis de Carabas. He still had powder on his chin. De Carabas stared at Mr. Croup. He turned back to look at Mr. Vandemar, and then, spontaneously, the Marquis de Carabas began to laugh. Mr. Croup smiled.
"You find us funny, Monsieur Marquis. Do you not? A source of amusement, is that not so, with our pretty clothes and our convoluted circumlocutions?"
Mr. Vandemar murmured.
"I haven't got a circumlo."
"And our little sillinesses of manner and behaviour, and perhaps we are funny."
Mr. Croup raised one finger then and waggled it at De Carabas.
"But you must never imagine," he continued, "that just because something is funny, Monsieur Marquis, it is not dangerous."
And Mr. Vandemar threw his knife at the Marquis hard and accurately. It hit him, hilt first, on the temple. His eyes rolled up in his head and his knees buckled.
"Circumlocution," said Mr. Croup to Mr. Vandemar. "It's a way of speaking around something, a digression, verbosity."
Mr. Vandemar picked up the Marquis de Carabas by his waistband and dragged him up the stairs, his head bump, bump, bumping on each step as they went. And Mr. Vandemar nodded.
"I wondered," he said.